This week's letter comes to us from Little Tommy. Little Tommy writes, "Dear George G, love the show." Well, thanks, Tommy. Appreciate that, buddy. What are some of the biggest concerns that Americans have right now when it comes to their finances? Yeah, that's always a good question to kind of take the pulse. And certainly one of the big things that we are seeing right now is home prices. It's home affordability. It's, can I participate in the American dream, or is that now out of reach for me? How in the world am I going to be able to come up with a down payment for a home when the average or the medium home price is whatever it is, and I need to come up with 20% of that in cash, and I'm already stressed out and stretched thin and trying to make every dollar go as far as I can? It's a tricky situation that we find ourselves in, little Tommy. So I appreciate the letter. And what I am curious about, and I think it's worth educating ourselves and learning more about, is, does it make sense to be saving for these big down payments? Or does it make more sense simply to come out of pocket with considerably less and just buy a home that way? That's what I want to dig into today. So that's what we're going to be digging into today. And just in case you were curious, as the fourth quarter of 2024, the median home sales price in the United States was $419,200. So previous quarter, it went up about $4,000. So it was $415,300 in 2023, the median monthly mortgage payment, because it's fine that, you know, now we know it's $420,000, the median home price in the United States. How much is that actually costing? And it's around $1,400 is the median monthly mortgage payment in the United States. So how about that? Okay. So then now the next question is, what percentage of after-tax income is that? And it's going to come out to be about, again, just based on the fact pattern of the median, it's going to be about 25% of their take-home after-tax income that we are devoting to making that mortgage payment. So a big chunk, a great big chunk. So is that, so going back to this idea, that is this the highest and best use of my money? I'm always interested in figuring out what the best place to put money is. Is it, does it make sense to do this? Does it make sense to do that? Thomas Sowell famously said, there's no solutions, there's only trade-offs. So when I say yes to one thing, I'm saying no to everything else. And there's an opportunity cost, there is a liquidity challenge, there is an accessibility challenge to all of this. When Americans don't necessarily have a ton of money saved, is it wise to save up a ton of it, which is clearly hard for us, it's hard for everybody, and then to use that money and give it to a bank so that you can qualify based on their parameters for a home loan? That's really the question that I want to ask and answer today. Is this the highest and best use for our money? Do people have any money saved? So let's break it down here. What percentage of Americans have less than $1,000 in cash? That's about 28% of Americans have less than $1,000 in cash. What about between $1,000 and $5,000? Well, that's about 12% of Americans have that much money. Between $5,000 and $10,000. So between $1,000 and $5,000, around 12%. Between $5,000 and $10,000, about 8%. $10,000 or more saved, it's about half of Americans have that. So half of Americans have savings of $10,000 or more. That's certainly a good thing. But if we're talking about saving for the median home price in the United States, which was $420,000, 10% of that is obviously $42,000. 22% or 20% of that is, you know, $84,000. So that is a substantial amount of money, and certainly a chunk of change that is well beyond what the average American has on hand. So does it make sense to take all of the money that we saved up and just send it to the bank? And we talk about what the benefits to that are. And then you can decide whether or not those are real benefits or not. But the question is this. If you did take that, take the money, you put down a 20% down payment, you put 80 grand in cash toward the down payment on a home. A lot of people are going to say, well, you immediately have equity. And whether or not that's true or not, that's a case by case thing. It's going to depend on a lot of different variables. But how easy is it to access that equity? Can you just call the bank and they'll give it back to you right away? No, of course not. There's a long process, one that you must qualify for in order to access that money. So what are we doing to people? People already don't have a lot of cash saved up. They work their tails off, make tons of sacrifices and great financial decisions, and then we ask them to put all that money towards the down payment on a home that in case of an emergency, they're not going to be able to access. So when an emergency happens, I don't have time to go call my bank and to qualify for a refi, cash out refi or whatever. So we are hamstringing a lot of people because that is not liquid. Are there better places to have that money? Well, reality of equity in your home is that your home is going to appreciate or depreciate in value regardless of your equity position. If you own a $1 million home and it goes up to $1.5 million because of market conditions, does that have anything to do with the amount of equity in the home or the amount of loan, the value of your loan? No, it doesn't. It's going to go up or down regardless of whether or not you have equity in the home or not. So is that a good investment? Is that a good place for your money? I don't necessarily think that it is. It certainly isn't liquid, and that's really what I'm getting at, is that I don't have access to this money readily. Yes, there are mechanisms to go and get it, but is it readily accessible? No, it's not. And real estate's been very, very dynamic, and it's a really important asset class. I own real estate. I think it's great, and I hope that everybody is able to own real estate if that's what they choose, and that's really what I'm trying to talk about here. But would there be other places that I could have that money, that $80,000, where I could get a higher rate of return, where it could be more accessible? I think that the answer is for sure yes. You could put it into a low-cost index fund. And if you put it in the S&P 500 for 5 years or 10 years, would that be a better decision? Would you rather put $80,000 down into your home, or would you rather have $80,000 in a brokerage account that was where you own the S&P 500 for 10 years? Would that be better? I think definitively it would be better to have that $80,000 in a brokerage account owning the S&P 500. I think that's a pretty simple answer to that question. So, highest and best use of money. I don't know if you've ever thought about this. Is this the best place? But are there even other options? I guess that's a big part of it as well. But let's go down memory lane here and look back on why it is that we arrive in this place where banks are expecting that we make this large down payment. In the 1900s, early 1900s, there wasn't a lot of mortgage. There wasn't a lot of availability of mortgages. So if you were going to buy a house, you had to have all the money. So it's a large cash payment. Obviously, the cost of a home in the early 1900s was considerably lower than it is today. Considerably. In the 1930s, mortgages were born. Now, during the Great Depression, there wasn't a lot of credit going on. So the FHA, Federal Housing Administration, was created as part of the New Deal to try and stabilize the housing market and encourage home ownership, which is a good thing. So the FHA, Federal Housing Administration, insured mortgages. So that was the idea or the introduction of lending to borrowers who didn't have the cash to be able to come up with it. So back then they said, okay, we're going to lend you the money, but you need to come up with $20,000. Okay. Sounds reasonable that we just introduced a new product to the market because we see it as a benefit that more Americans owning homes, that is a good thing. So we want to make this available. So we're coming out of time where there were no financing options available. You had to come up with all cash to now there are financing options available, but you need to come up with 20%. After the post-war, after World War II, the 40s and the 50s, housing market boomed. The economy recovered. We had the VA, the Veterans Administration, and the same old FHA helping people to buy homes. Around that time, it was still around 10 to 20% in down payments, but there was a lot of pressure to make homeownership more available, more affordable. And so we started to find programs where no down payment loans started showing up. And again, the VA for veterans, these were introduced. In the 60s and the 70s, there was a further expansion of these options where lenders all of a sudden started saying, okay, instead of 10%, instead of 20%, we can make you a loan for 5 to 10% down to stimulate homeownership, particularly for middle income families. The middle class, we want to support that. We want that to grow. So at that time, believe it or not, lenders decided to start protecting themselves, and they have every right to do that. So they started issuing private mortgage insurance. And that just meant that anybody who was going to come up with less than 20 grand or 20% as a down payment needed to include private mortgage insurance, which simply protects the banks. But you, the borrower, are the person who is paying the premium for that PMI or private mortgage insurance. The 80s and the 90s brought in the rise of low down payment loans. And again, I talked about the three, it's it became 3 to 5% down, making it way more eligible or making it way more affordable for more people who maybe would not be in a position to buy homes. This is where the subprime lending phenomenon starts showing up, where loans were offered with even smaller down payments or none at all, making it easier for people to buy homes, but also increasing the amount of risk. 2000s, we had the housing bubble, which led up to the 2008 financial crisis. And this is where everything went off the rails. We stopped doing any due diligence. We stopped really doing any underwriting. If we're being honest with ourselves, we were just giving loans to absolutely everybody without checking if they even had a job, if they even had any income, if they had any assets at all. And certainly, I went through this recently. You just follow the money. There's a lot of people getting paid on the origination of a loan, and this whole process from get the loan, sell the house, all of it. And of course, what happened was everything exploded. So after 2008, we returned to the traditional down payment with stricter regulations, and we decided to start doing underwriting again. And so today, conventional loan generally requires a 5 to 20% down payment, but there are still programs out there. So the 20% is still very common for conventional loans, but there are programs out there, and I'll talk a little bit about that. So what is the purpose? What is the purpose of it? If you were to ask the bank, what's the purpose of making borrowers put a down payment down on these homes? It reduces, and this is what they would tell you, is that it reduces the loan amount. The more you put down up front, the less you need to borrow, which can lower monthly payments. But I just think that that's mildly ridiculous because I should just figure out the cost of the home that I'm interested in buying, the interest rate that I'm going to have, and understand that my budget allows me to be paying X number of dollars every month. So if in that scenario, I would just buy lesser house instead of buying a larger house and putting more money down and giving all my capital over to the bank, who's happy to have it, obviously, because they want the money because they understand the time value of it, and they understand that they are going to put that work or that money to work somewhere else and earn interest off of it, as we ought to be doing, not allowing the bank to do that. It shows lender commitment. So that's the second thing. It shows the lender a commitment. So the lender sees that a down payment is proof you're financially responsible and invested in the purchase. Well, I think that there's other ways. And what are we talking about here? Is this like an engagement ring? Is it a promise ring of some kind? Are we going steady bank? No. I'm not. I think that that's ridiculous. I think that that's totally stupid. I am going to. You have your underwriting standards. If I meet them, we can do business. It's not showing you a commitment above and beyond anything else. I think that that's dumb. You can lower the interest rate. That's the third thing. A larger down payment often leads to better loan terms. Same kind of thing. I just don't agree with that. It avoids private mortgage insurance. I think that private mortgage insurance is a ridiculous thing because it's not protecting me. It is protecting the bank. So that unless I'm putting myself in a tough financial position by giving you all my cash, which we just went through, that's what most people are doing because not that many people have $1,000 saved up. Not that many people have, a very small percentage, have over $10,000. So to buy, come up with 20% on the median home in America, we're talking about $80,000. So you're taking all my liquid money. And that is not positioning me for success. That's really a fundamental thing right there. It's like this process is not positioning me for success. And it's good that there's banks. There's benefits to that. But I am more interested in having a client relationship as opposed to what would be the term that I'm searching for. I want the terms to be more. I don't like private mortgage insurance. I don't like having to pay for that, but if that's what we decide, if that's what the marketplace decides, must be there in order for me to not come out of pocket so much, then so be it. I really stumbled through that one, but I think you get the idea. The next point that the banks will tell you is that it builds equity immediately. I'm not interested in that. I went through that. I don't. That's not something I'm concerned with. There are better uses of my money. There's better locations for my money. Reduce the risk of being underwater if home values drop. Having more equity protects you. Yeah, sure. But still, that's okay. That's okay. I can't time the market. I cannot be in a position where I am forced to sell securities, stocks, or assets when they are down, locking in a loss. And I want to put myself in a position where I am not having to sell real estate when it's underwater, because that's the only time you lose money. Buy low, sell high. Okay. My heart goes out to you if during the financial crisis you put no money down and bought a bunch of houses and then you, for whatever reason, couldn't service the mortgage. That's a bummer. But you went into that eyes wide open. This is why we need to have emergency funds, so that I can cover the cost of the mortgage even when real estate prices may be going down. So who really benefits from that? Who is benefiting? Well, I think that the banks will tell you it's a way to protect buyers, but I don't think so. I think that it's simply lenders requiring a down payment to reduce their risk. So the more the borrower puts down, the less likely they are to default. Even if they do, the lender is more likely to recover their money through foreclosure. Yeah, I get it. Obviously, that's why you're doing it. We're going to sell George this $240,000 house. He's going to give us $84,000 in cash. It's going to reduce the amount of the loan. We already have, 20% of the cost of the house. He already gave that to us up front. So if he defaults, if we foreclose and we get the house, well, we're probably going to be doing just fine. George, on the other hand, is going to be doing terrible in that scenario. So the banks will say, well, this is why banks want it, because it's ensuring the buyer's commitment. I certainly get that. It helps protect against market fluctuations. The bank, really. So I really do think that. And it's not that it's not fair that it benefits the banks because they are lending the money. So I get it. All I'm doing is exploring whether or not it makes sense. And does this make sense for you? Does it make sense for your financial situation? And is there another option other than simply to go and put 10 to 20% down? That's what we're talking about. So obviously, if I can't pay my mortgage, I bought that $240,000 house. If I fall behind on my mortgage 3 to 6 months, the lender can foreclose on me and take my house. That will damage my credit score. So I'm obviously losing the house. I'm losing whatever down payment that I put into it. I'm losing all of the money that I paid into it. My credit is going to go into the toilet. I lost any equity that may have been built up. There is something called the deficiency judgment that, depending on what state you're in, the borrower, me, may face wage garnishments, liens, or stuff like that, just further hardships. There could be legal costs that I'll be, you know, running into on this, and I'll have a hard time qualifying for future loans, and obviously it'll be hard on me. So these are all bad things. And the bank, they could potentially incur financial losses. There's going to be costs when they need to go and foreclose. They need to hire attorneys. There are people who are processing all of this stuff. I absolutely get it. It's not free to do that. It's not good for banks to be running around throwing people out of their houses and foreclosing, so they don't want to do that. There's risk. There's political will or political damage which can be done if all of a sudden a lot of people are getting kicked out of their houses. The politicians may get involved with this. There are all kinds of different things, but fundamentally, they're going to take ownership of the house. So they keep the asset. What they choose to do with it, that I don't know. They're going to hold on to it. There's a carry cost with it, of course. They may be selling it under market. Could that happen again? Of course it could. Could 2008 happen again? Yeah. But what's happened today? Everything's recovered. The only time you lose money in the stock market, the only time you lose money in the real estate market is when you sell, when things go down, obviously. So there's so much. what about when we get to the point where we say, okay, whose responsibility is it to make sure that this is a good transaction? You see, throughout history, we as a society and a culture want to motivate people, want to incentivize people to buy real estate, want to help people pursue the American dream. So that's obviously an important thing and has been throughout time. And then we say, well, we want more people to gain access. And so we lower standards and do the subprime stuff or whatever to get more people into homes. So in that example, we are lowering our underwriting standards. When I say underwriting, I'm just saying, here's the criteria that we as the bank are using to say that George is a worthy borrower, that we're going to lend money to him. We want him as a client. We think he's going to pay back the loan, and we're going to get our money back plus the interest. That's how it works. Banks want you to do that. So why not, if I were running banks or whatever, I'd say, okay, let's just make sure that we're doing a really thorough, really good job underwriting each one of these transactions so that we're not doing no income, no assets, no job loans, ninja loans, and just handing them out. How do we get to that point? How do we get to the point where the banks are the ones responsible for doing a better job underwriting loans? Does that mean that interest rates are going to be higher? Does that mean that there's going to be private mortgage insurance on all loans? I don't know what that's going to be. But I'd say that that's a more reasonable thing, and that I would rather pay a slightly higher monthly payment than come out of pocket $80,000 up front. Because the whole thing is, again, not enough people have enough money saved. And I'm trying to find the highest and best use of my assets. And if I bust my butt, I pay off my credit card debt, I get $50,000 saved up. I get 80 grand saved up. It takes me years to do that. It could take me 3, 4, 5, 6 years to get out of credit card debt and to save that much money, only to then hand it all over to the bank, putting me in a really precarious situation where any little emergency is going to screw it all up. In essence, what the bank is doing is they're not positioning me for success as a borrower. They're doing the opposite. They're putting me in a terrible position as the borrower, where they're at risk of having me default on my loan and them having to foreclose on my home if I don't have any liquid reserves, if I don't have any cash on hand. And or I could be taking that money, keeping my emergency fund, and then investing it so that money can be growing. And there's not that many people out there that have money that's growing on their behalf that they're invested in. So there's so many reasons why I think that this makes a lot more sense. I mean, there's so many people who are demotivated and so depressed and bummed out because there's no affordable housing. And this is a big part of that. So certainly I'm an advocate for bringing more affordable housing online and helping people to be financially secure and making good financial decisions and forcing people to save up so much money, some of money that they've never saved before, only to hand it to the bank. If that's what it takes, then that's fine. But I advocate that there's a better way to do it. So I think that there are loan programs, and like anything, every single one of these programs has a lot of fine print to it. Tons of fine print, and there it depends on where you live and the amount of money that you make and loan to value stuff, whether or not you qualify for these things. So just a couple of examples, because there are options that are zero down payment. There's options for 3 to 5% down payment. There's something called the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA loans, that are offering incentives to people to live in more rural type communities. So you can look up USDA loans. If you are a person who says, okay, yeah, I could, to get into the home market, I could live in a more rural place as opposed to living in a city. Well, then this is definitely something that that you could get into. So I think that that's an exciting thing. There's things called Home Ready and Home Possible loans, and they are offered through Fannie and Freddie, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, respectively. And they're designed to help first-time buyers with less than perfect credit. And a lot of these are 3% down payment loans. But then there are also now loans that are for just regular borrowers, not first-time home buyers, not people with bad credit, but just regular people, I guess, more conventional type buyers that are eligible for these things. So like anything else, like any financial product, anytime we get into banking and investing, buyer beware. And you need to do a good job of educating yourself, working with top-tier professionals so they can look at your entire financial situation. We have a tendency when we are consuming and we're buying things to look at things in silos, to look at my 401k is this, my investment account is here, my real estate is over here, I've got my cash here, when it doesn't matter. Well, it matters very much where it is, but we sort of silo these off and segregate them off so that we don't think about them in comparing them or taking into account all of them at the same time. And that's what we ought to be doing. We're well served to make sure that we understand how all of our money is interacting. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. But just from a common sense perspective, you don't want to look at anything in silo. Like, oh, the house is this. No, we need to take into consideration time horizon, so when I can access the money, the rules around getting the money out, the interest rates, the cost, all of these things. So I think it's critical to be working with a loan professional, a realtor, and whoever your financial person is, your insurance person, just ensure that they know what they're talking about and that they're well-versed and they have your best interest in mind, not just trying to get you qualified. Not trying to get you qualified for the most loan that you can get or the most house that you can get. So it's imperative that you know your financial situation, you know your budget, your cash flow, and make sure that you're managing your debt correctly and properly so that you do put yourself in position for success. Because we can, we people can handle and overcome small mistakes with money, but it's awfully tough to overcome a giant mistake with money. When we buy too much house, again, unless you're infinitely wealthy, if you're independently infinitely wealthy, you need to make good decisions, because when you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to everything else. And when you make a bad decision and you say yes to paying too much, putting too much money down on a house or buying too much house, so your monthly mortgage payment is too much, you are really limiting your ability to invest, to work with just in other areas. So take into consideration, you know, you need money today. You're going to need money 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 30 years from now. What's the best place? What's the highest and best use? These are all the questions that I want you to be thinking about. And if you want to have a conversation, I will include a link in the notes of the show that you can go in and say, yeah, I'd like to talk with somebody, and I can connect you with one of our approved Academy partners. We've got Academy partners in the areas of tax and mortgage and real estate and financial advisors and all of these things. And so we've done a lot of work on our end, making sure that we're working with people who are adept and who do business in the way that I've just described. So check that out. If that's of interest to you, click on the link and we'll certainly connect you. So appreciate the letter, little Tommy. Appreciate the question. We can use all the help that we can get in here. And the idea is, let's just make good financial decisions, not just for the short term, but also the midterm and the long term. Because after all, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are, brothers and sisters. Got to act accordingly.